Land tax, stamp duty, tenants. Sure, property is great, but there are easier ways to get your passive income, sometimes with franking credits. Through ETFs or exchange-traded funds, you can buy a basket of shares in many different companies in one trade. BetaShares offers Australia's broadest range of ETFs, including income-focused funds, which aim to provide yield-hungry investors with attractive income streams. Discover the BetaShares range of ETFs and how simple they can be to invest in by going to betashares.com.au. Read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website and consider if the fund is right for you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast by the Rask Group. It's for educational purposes only. So please do not make a financial, legal, investment or taxation decision based on solely what you hear in this show.
Welcome to the Australian Property Podcast.
We're on a mission to be Australia's most trusted property podcast.
I'm Owen Rask, founder of the Rask Group.
I'm Pete Wargent, author and buyer's agent.
I'm Amy Linardi, and I am a buyer's agent.
I'm Chris Bates, ex-financial planner and mortgage broker.
Together, we'll take you through every step of your property journey.
From first home buyer to decades of property investing.
Amy Linardi, welcome to this episode of the Australian Property Podcast.
Hello, Owen. Always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. Our first recording of 2024 together for the show, which is always a delight. I know you were in the office the other day. I didn't get a chance to give you the high five, but
I came into your office and you weren't there.
but no, it's great to chat today. We're going to be talking about some of the common mistakes people make when buying property, and there are a lot of them. We're going to try and contain ourselves to an ordered and structured list today.
Specifically, Owen, we're going to talk about mistakes, because I like specifics, by the way.
This is good.
Niche. Specifically, mistakes people make when appraising properties or trying to figure out how much a property is worth. Yes, that's what we're going to focus on today.
Good point. Mm. So, a lot of people do this. A lot of people think that it's kind of art, and some people think that there is science, and we're going to try and cover both today. I'm really keen on this, as you know, because I'm potentially in one of those people that may make some of these mistakes. So we've spoken about this before. We spoke about it way back in the day on the free course that we've got. And I'm just going to prompt you through this list that you've put together today. Mm-hmm. So you do this every day. I just know that you took a call from a mortgage broker, and I know that
I said, sorry, Owen, hold that thought. I've got to answer this call.
So first up, maybe just to ask you a very simple question, and maybe this is where we begin, is what can I even do this as an individual? I guess that is my question to you. Can I do this?
Well, let's bring it back even further to that and say, what is an appraisal? Why do you need to figure out how much a property is worth? Why is that relevant? Well, it's because, you know, unlike if you just go down to the local shops and you buy a banana and all the bananas are the same price and there's fixed price, you know how much it's cost, it's going to cost, and you can compare it to another banana at another store. Property is so, so different. And in many cases, you know, sometimes you've got a 10 apartments that have sold recently in one block. And it's really easy to say, okay, well, this is how much that's worth, because there's so many very similar recent sales to benchmark against. Mm. And sometimes in those new estate areas as well, maybe there's some really good, close, recent comparable sales, and it's just really easy and clear. But in many situations, it's not that clear. And you do need to get an idea around value for, well, for your own peace of mind, To make sure that you're not, you know, significantly overpaying for a property. I don't love that word sometimes because it can be subjective. But then also not undervaluing it too much and then shooting yourself in the foot, not giving you a chance to buy that property if you're valuing it less than everyone else. Mm. And then it's to make sure, you know, you've got confidence around getting your finance through because your pre-approval is going to be subject to the bank valuing that property. And just to give you confidence in that negotiation process so that if you get to a point where you have to make a decision on price, you can do that and not doubt yourself and question yourself. But to answer your question, Owen, yes, you can do it. Anyone can do it. But I will say it is one of the harder things to do in property. It is challenging. And I've done, I don't even know how many appraisals, would be over 5,000 appraisals. I've been involved in over 1,500 property purchases. And obviously for every property we pursue, we miss out on plenty of other properties. So I've done lots and some are easier than others. And some I say to the clients, like, this has been a really challenging one and my confidence rating isn't super high, but it's better than nothing and it's better than just taking a stab in the dark.
Yeah, I teach value investing when it comes to all things businesses and stocks and all of that type of thing. But when it comes to an asset, particularly for me, if it's something that I want to live in, I find that I'm very easily sucked into the emotional side of property purchases. Just like probably most people that are looking for a home rather than investment or these types of things. You mentioned there that like if it's an apartment building, it may be easier because there's maybe a few have sold recently. So I imagine like a step that people could take is just to start thinking about what has sold in the area using comparable sales or even just going across multiple weekends to multiple different types of properties.
Yeah. So this is kind of the first mistake which people make, which is some people don't do any kind of research at all. And, you know, maybe they'll say to me, oh, I think this property is worth X. And I'll say, well, why? So I just think it is. So what are you benchmarking against? Or how did you come to that conclusion? And sometimes this also happens when we're trying to buy properties and the vendor has this price in mind. And I say to the agent, where did they get that from? Out of interest?
Yep.
Did they see a particular sale? And that's what they're benchmarking against. Because sometimes people just pluck figures out of the air. So the first mistake is not doing anything at all because you don't know how to, or you feel overwhelmed, or you're not sure what you're doing. That is very, very common. And Pete and I did an episode last year about appraising properties where we kind of talked it through, you know, the steps involved and how to do it. But unless you jump into the sold section of realestate.com.au and domain, because all of that information is there for you right at your fingertips and it's free, unless you get in there and really deep dive into sold sales and then benchmark them against this property and see how they compare and, you know, is one in a better location, is the other one in a better condition, and really write it all down and be really thorough with it, then you're not going to be able to come to form some kind of conclusion. So to begin with, the first step is to actually do this, do your own appraisal. And if you're not spending a minimum of an hour on it, and I usually take on average about an hour to do an appraisal, and I've done that many. And I'm a really fast typer when I don't have a broken hand. Minimum of an hour, and ideally you're spending a little bit longer on that.
To
do it properly.
For those of you that aren't watching the video, Amy does have a fractured or broken hand. The life of a buyer's agent is high risk, people. So just so you're aware.
Putting my hand up at auction too much.
Yeah, too many bids. But it's so true. I won't name names, but I've experienced with some people recently, just friends and family who are looking for homes and they're just kind of like taking a scattergun approach. I mean, they're kind of falling into this first mistake. Is they're just looking like property here in this location, property in that suburb, completely different. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason. They couldn't tell me whatsoever whether that is a good price, a reasonable price, because they're looking at like one in this suburb and then two suburbs that way. They've got another one on another weekend. And I'm thinking to myself, do they actually know where the kind of the even just a rough baseline is for this property? I don't actually know.
Yeah. So before you get started officially looking, you spend, because you can't go back in time, obviously, and walk through previous properties, but you can spend a lot of time in the sold section of these websites to really sort of get a feeling of what properties are selling for, and spend hours and hours in there and go through everything and click through the listings and Google map for locations, like really study it. And then when you're actively looking, going to as many inspections as possible, going to auctions, so that when you do see a sold result and you say, okay, well, that sold for X and this is how it compares to my property, or I know this one is in better condition because I walked through that other one. Looked good on photos, but not in person. So just the more, like anything in life, the more time and effort you spend on the research phase and being really active in the market, the better prepped you'll be able to do an appraisal. Because I use the word appraisal, but it's essentially a comparable sales analysis, figuring out how much that property is worth when you need to do that. Because as soon as you see a property which you like, and I should have added this since the eighth mistake, I'm going to squeeze it in as like 1B, is that as soon as you see a property that you like and you want to pursue, do this homework straight away. Go home and do it on the couch that night and start doing your research, because a property can sell really quickly. Sometimes you might get a call the next day, say, hey, we've got an offer. What do you want to do? And also by doing that straight away too, you might clearly see that that property is going to go over your budget, and then you cannot waste your time. Yeah. Sometimes there is clear and compelling evidence behind that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's pretty, I think for most listeners of the show, you'd know that everyone listening to this is like, get out there, get your boots on the ground, inspect the places, keep notes, keep a record. We're tentatively in the market is what I would say. Like we're probably 6 to 12 months away from actually offers on a house. But that said, I'm still out there. I've still got my real estate app open. And for those of you that don't know, if you add a property to your collection or to your kind of like list, you can do that. But you can also add a note for that property or notes. And I do that as I go to the inspection. I make notes. What does the real estate agent say? What did the property look like? Was I catfished? In which case, I feel like I was a few times a couple of weekends ago. Of the seven, Amy, about like one of them was actually like the photos. I think they've all got a hold of AI lately, but
yeah.
But that's just a really simple way to start collecting that kind of IP on the properties and the area, like understanding what's in the market. Now, number two that you sent through to me as a mistake that people make when they're appraising or valuing properties is something called a CMA report. Now, when you sent this through, I was thinking, should I know what this means? Can you tell me what this is?
I don't think they're all called this, but like there's this these automated reports, which sometimes a mortgage broker or a bank will print off for you. Or, you know, you can sometimes get it off RP Data or just various property websites. Mm-hmm. It's a computer generated report, which tells you how much a property is worth. And it usually gives you like a range, and maybe sometimes it'll say like high, medium, low confidence. And then it'll pop a couple of comparable, I use that in quotation marks, sold properties in there as well. And they're just so incredibly unreliable. They can actually cause more harm than good, because I've seen plenty that are way over. I've seen plenty that are way under. I've seen ones that, you know, have high confidence rating, and it's 200 grand off. So they can cause a lot of damage, and I totally understand they're well-meaning, especially if, you know, your broker gives one to you. I feel like a lot of them have kind of done it less recently because I've started to realize they're not helpful. But anything that's done by a computer and an algorithm for property especially is just not going to be accurate. So I would just try and avoid printing those reports, getting those reports, listening to those reports, do your own research. Those computers do not know if a property was in the best street or the worst street. They don't know if there was, you know, a massive apartment block next door. It was totally unrenovated. There's so many factors that go into an appraisal.
Question for you on this. So say, for example, if I'm looking at a property, typically like when someone buys a property, my understanding is the bank's got to send out someone to value it or do something like this. Occasionally I hear words like desktop valuation. Is that the same thing or is this different?
So when you have a pre-approval, the bank needs to have an independent valuation done to ensure that they're happy with the price that you've paid. Sometimes that appraiser will just be what's called a desktop valuation, which is essentially the computer just saying, yes, this is fine.
Right.
And in which case, great. That's great. Like you, that doesn't impact you at all, except that your mortgage is just going to go through. Mm. Or sometimes they'll do a physical valuation. They'll have to go out there, walk through the property and make sure that they're happy with it. But that desktop valuation, it's like it comes later. Yes, it's the computer doing it, but it's really just saving the bank and value of time because computer says, yes, they're happy with that. Happy days.
Yeah. But you should definitely, as an individual, you should definitely be doing your own work here.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And another mistake that I'm just going to throw my friend under the bus here, by the way. Another thing that I see my friend doing a lot is he's kind of like he's just like jumping around all over the place. I think it's because he hasn't done the strategy. He hasn't done the brief. He hasn't sat down with someone and actually got proper, honest advice and feedback on his goals and situation. But he's kind of like just jumping all over the place. He doesn't know which suburb he's looking at. He's like, you know what I mean? Do you see that a bit?
Yes and no. Like quite often when people come to me and they're at the point of engaging an advocate, they are starting to get quite serious. But I give them homework to do.
Right.
And the homework is what suburbs are you looking in? What are your non-negotiables? What's your budget? But more importantly, what are some tangible sold examples that meet all of those criteria?
Yeah.
And then they've got to sit down and do it. Yeah. And that starts to help them like refine in the locations, et cetera. And someone once said to me, "Is you know, 30 suburbs too much to have on my list?" I said, "Yes, absolutely, way too many. It means you don't know what you want and you don't know what you're trying to achieve out of this if you've got that many suburbs. So, before you start even thinking about suburbs, what does this property purchase have to achieve for you? Is it lifestyle or is it size or is it distance to the city or you know, yard or whatever it is? Because all of these suburbs are going to give you totally different outcomes and lifestyles."
Yeah, so I'll give you an example from our situation, which is probably one of your mistakes, is like we've been looking for like a larger block, like a kind of like intermediary step between where we are now and a farm, right? And so we've looked down on Melbourne's peninsula. For those of you that are familiar, that would be places like Mornington, inland a bit as well out the back towards Hastings, but not quite Hastings, which is, I don't know how to liken that to some of the places across the country, but it's kind of near the bay. Not really surf beach, but it's like in the bay. And there's some bigger blocks there. But there's a suburb in between kind of the city suburbs and the peninsula itself, which is Lang Warren, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Amy. And they have some really big blocks. And we're talking 2-acre blocks, bigger houses, 4 or 5 bedrooms, and plenty of space for kids and that sort of stuff. I am not at all familiar with that area. So I literally just went down there. I did not expect anything. And I was quite surprised. And I feel like this is a case where it goes wrong, but it can easily go, it went well, but it can easily go wrong.
Yeah. And now that you've discovered this area, you spend time researching it.
Mm.
You look in the sold section, you spend heaps of time there, you go to inspections, you speak to agents, and now you get familiar.
Yeah. But what I realized, Amy, was that there's such dispersion between some of the properties. Like you look at one property and then you look at another, and they can be worlds apart. And I'm trying to figure out why. Like, I don't really understand why.
Yeah, it's really hard. I remember the first appraisal. It was kind of like a practice appraisal that I ever did when I was working in advocacy. And I said to my colleague, I was like, how much extra value does this fourth bedroom add? Tell me a dollar amount. Is it 12 grand, 50 grand? Like, what is it? So I can factor it in. Cause I'm really like, that's the way my brain thinks. But, you know, as I've done more and more, I've realized, you know, there is no exact dollar amount. And this is perhaps leaving into, this will lead us into the next mistake, which people make, which is not getting a broad enough data set to compare to.
Right.
So what we're trying to establish and the way that we're trying to figure out market value is to see like a kind of almost like a trend. And ideally, we're aiming for sort of 6 to 10 sold properties.
Sold, right, okay.
Sold properties, which are somewhat comparable. They might be comparable in terms of location, land size, type of property. You're not going to go and compare a 2-bedroom apartment to a 2-bedroom house. I feel like that's obvious. And then recency too, the more recent, the more accurate with market timing. And you know, if you can only find two, you've got to broaden out a little bit. You might have to just go a little bit further out or further back in time. If you can find 15, maybe you're being too broad. So I'm aiming to get, you know, eight as a sweet spot. And then I'm putting them, writing them down sort of from lowest price to highest price. And then I'm just sort of figuring out where this property sits within that. And that then helps give me a guide. So we're trying to establish this overall trend to say, well, it's definitely better than that one. It's definitely not as good as that one. It's probably somewhere around here. And you probably end up with some kind of range. You're not going to end up with a result that says this property is worth exactly $643,000. It's not how it works. But the more you do and the more you practice, the more that you will feel somewhat comfortable with this process. But I have no point saying that this is an easy thing to do. Sure. And also, Owen, I could do an appraisal and someone else could do an appraisal and they'll be different. I've had three valuations done by three different bank appraisals.
Yep.
They have been different.
Yep.
So there's a lot of subjectivity here.
Well, Chris often talks about it as like when the valuer comes to your house, if you're already a homeowner, and like sweet talking them a little bit and saying, pointing out some successful sales in the neighborhood. And so like there's an element even in it when you already own a property. But how many properties do you think, like realistically, someone would need to go and inspect to get that kind of baseline and to start to feel that confidence that they are kind of, you know, they are taking in enough?
Look, I mean, I can go and value a property in an area that I've never purchased in before in theory. And because I've done it so much, I could get a relatively, close result. But it depends on the person, the personality. I've got super analytical clients that need data to feel comfortable with things. So, but I reckon just, you know, the more you can do at the start, the better. But sometimes you might find a great property after only 2 weeks of inspecting, and then, you know, that's the only exposure that you've got. You've got to work with that. And then you're relying on your desktop research on your computer.
So we went to a total of 7 properties a couple of Saturdays ago. And I feel like just from the 7, it was clear, like we were establishing that like of those 7, maybe, you know, at least 50% of them wouldn't be right, even though the photos may suggest that they are in our range, but they're really not when you get there and you actually see the reality. And I feel like for me to get confidence personally, I'd probably need to go, you know, be inspecting for a few months to really get that confidence that, okay, I have a pretty good baseline of where the market is. I've kept my notes, done all that. So I feel like that would be for me, but absolutely some other people, you know, I just worry about people. Like you said, first mistake number one is not doing it at all.
Yeah, it's better than nothing, even if you've only been to a couple.
What I did notice, and this may be a segue for you, is I did notice that my partner, Sarah, she definitely seemed to have a more, and this is no disrespect to her, but she seemed to have more promising, I guess, reflection of the property and the way it was presented based on how the agent presents to them. So, and this is, she's aware of all the pitfalls of that, but she seemed to recall, you know, she tended to be more engaged in the property if the agent was engaged with her. It was obvious, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that as well. You know, the positivity rubs off.
And that was actually quite interesting to me.
Yeah, so a lot of people do rely on what the real estate agent says because, you know, they're the perceived expert. Some people, though, opposite. They're like, I don't listen to anything that the real estate agent says. But another mistake that I see made when doing appraisals is when there's a sale, which is, I would call it an anomaly in the comparable sales results. So sometimes I'll be doing an appraisal and I'll say, that one has sold for way less or way more than where I feel like it should have based on all of this other research. And in which case I will call the real estate agent and in a very polite way say, hey, I'm just doing a bit of research and I noticed this property sold for X, which seems, you know, a bit above or a bit below what I feel like it should have based on my research. Was there any reason why? You've got to say it in a non-confrontational way, especially if the property sold for less. The agent's like, oh, do you think I didn't do a good job? But for example, I bid on a property a couple of weeks ago. It was probably worth circa 1.4. And there were two people that just went head to head, and they went all the way up to mid 1.6s. Oh, and wow. It was absolutely like absolutely crazy. And if anyone's looking at that, that's going to skew their results a little bit. And, you know, every single agent in the area is now talking about that sale, and all the vendors' expectations have gone up. But other sales since have not been close to that. Right. So, you know, sometimes you do have to do that bit of extra digging and call the agent. Or I've had ones where they have, I'm like, why is this so cheap? And I call the agent, they go, oh, it's infested with termites. Or, you know, for whatever reason, it needed way more work than it looked on photos. Or sometimes an agent will say, just terrible luck, we lost our buyers before the auction. So you can just factor that into your appraisal so that you're not then letting like one data point skew everything else, which can, give you a totally different outcome.
But so say in the case of a house or a property, in the case of one going for more than you think, a lot of people would sit back and say, well, the market's raced away from me.
And then it's more just, you know, important from that is to then like really actively track what's happening from there and other results that are coming up since then and seeing if they are all, you know, at that new similar price, because that's going to perfectly segue us into the next mistake, which is not tracking the market movement. Because yes, strong prices, plural, can indicate a jump in the market. And from the end of 2023, sort of like November, December, prices here in Melbourne were pretty, you know, they were struggling a little bit. Everyone had checked out. The sentiment wasn't great. We had a surprise interest rate hike. But now in January, all of a sudden, everything has picked up significantly. There are more buyers out there. There are better results. There are properties that have been around for a while that are selling now. And I have now factored all of that in to my appraisals.
Okay.
It's very clear to me because I'm actively out there. But if you're a buyer coming in and then comparing current prices or, you know, doing an appraisal but comparing it to November, December prices only, you're going to not be competitive because the market's picked up. But you need need more than one data point to give you confidence around that.
Yeah, because that's probably everyone's fear when they go to buy properties is typically people get borrowing capacity for X, and so they go up to X when they start searching for properties, right? Or round about that. And so they're worried that just like the next person or the next group, that maybe this thing runs out of my range pretty quickly before I'm able to respond or recognize what's actually happening.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, sometimes it's not just sold prices, which give an indication of changes in the market. If anyone was out here inspecting in December in Melbourne, you know, walking through opens, a couple of people there. And then this year we've had properties where there's been 30, 40 plus groups through each open, and not because they're underquoted or anything. It's like, it's just everyone is now a bit more positive. Consumer sentiment, buyer sentiment has picked up. And even that alone, like that's number of people through a property isn't an indicator of what it's going to sell for. But that's just one of the signals that you can start to notice and track. Mm. And so tracking the market is important. And this is where it can become really challenging when you're doing your comparable sales and you're looking back in time. If you don't know how the market in February compares to the market last August.
Yeah.
And there's almost no way to know unless you spend all of this time in that sold section and then kind of have been tracking the market over the last 6 months. You don't have to be in the market, but go back through 6 months of sales. And you might think, okay, well, clearly properties that I was interested in were selling for about this much back in August, and they seem to have gone up a bit or down a bit. Sometimes it's really clear and sometimes it's not. But all the more reason why we have this, you know, broad selection of 6 to 8 to 10 sales to work off as well. But I can tell you as an advocate, and when I'm doing my appraisal, I will always make a comment, for example, sold last December, softer market, and I'll factor that into my final appraisal.
All right, Amy. So far we've got number one, which is not doing any type of research and not really getting that proper kind of like substantive research in on what it is you're buying, where you're buying and why. So that's obvious. Next up, we had relying too much on those automated valuation reports, if you call them that. The next one was focusing too much on one sale and thinking that that's indicative of like the entire market. And maybe, you know, that kind of throws you off. Next one was agents making the most of the resource in the area and understanding, well, why did this property sell for X price? Why did that one sell? I think you made a really good example there of the termites. Like, you don't know unless you've been in the property, you've maybe done the pest inspection, and you don't actually know what's wrong with the property. And we just covered kind of being aware of what's happening in the market and what's shifting underneath you as you are doing these inspections, as you are looking at properties. So that means we've got two to go. So what are the next two?
So the next one is, it's actually kind of to do with what you were talking about earlier with looking into Lang Warren and just not being like super familiar with locations. Mm-hmm. And the mistake here is that sometimes I will see people who are doing their comparable sales analysis, but then they're benchmarking that property against another one that sold in a far inferior part of that suburb. Mm. And there are certain suburbs where a property which sells in the best part of that area or the best street in comparison to the worst part or just the less superior part, yep, to put it nicely, there can be, you know, 20% differential between them, sometimes more. You look at a suburb here in Melbourne called Reservoir. It's the biggest suburb in Melbourne. Mm. And, you know, prime Reservoir compared to on the fringes, the prices are completely different. So you need to do this research at the start and know the areas that are more desirable. And again, okay, my broken record here, but going through the sold section, be like, okay, well, properties in this area, they are selling for much more than this area. Why?
Mm.
Why is that?
I noticed that with some of the properties, right? Because they were still part of the same Lang Warren. Like, it's the same suburb. So like north, south, east, west or whatever. It was the same kind of postcode. It was the same everything. But you could be looking and rocking up at that property and it's got a very different price tag. Like, one of them was $200,000 different and that was on the upside. But we got there and the property itself was nowhere near as nice, we thought, as the one that we just came from. But it turns out it's only about 2 minutes from the Woolies and it's 2 minutes, mm-hmm, from the freeway and it's 2 minutes, you know, it's the location, even though our perspective into it wasn't that, people were willing to pay a very different price for that and we weren't aware why. So we just walked away from it thinking that's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I had one recently in Bentley and it was a perfect downsizer's unit. Mm-hmm. Downsizer, you know, being someone who's maybe moving out of a big home and they want low maintenance and single level, all of this jazz. And it went for significantly more than a lot of comparable sales in the area because it was so close to the shops.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, that's what they downsizers really value, you know, the idea to just walk a couple hundred meters, not rely on the car so much. So that sold for a significant premium. Mm. So, and again, you know, this is hard things to figure out, especially if you don't know the area. If you already live in a certain suburb though, you might know these things.
But the way I think about this is, right, like if you do your work or you pay someone to do it for you, frankly, which is what we'll probably end up doing, is effectively what you're doing is you're letting that person, or if you're doing it yourself, you're doing your research properly. You're out there trying to find those anomalies, trying to find those things that stand out to you and say, yeah, it might be 100, 150 grand below what is kind of my assessment. And that's a good thing. So now we need to find out, well, let's explore this. Let's see what's going on here. And I believe, I don't know, maybe I'm way off my, but I kind of believe that that's kind of the edge that you have as a property buyer. You're kind of trying to spot those and say, well, maybe this is my opportunity.
Yeah. So your appraisal will help you in so many ways. It'll help you to identify opportunities. It'll help you to then, you know, figure out, well, at what price does it not make sense anymore? At what, yeah, price, you know, is it potentially worth? And then how much extra am I prepared to pay? And at what price does it not make sense? Because you can get something else now. Yeah. It's just so, so, so important to do all of this. And you know, there's not a single property that we've ever gone for or purchased as a buyer's advocate where we don't do an appraisal for.
Mm.
It's the one of the biggest value adds. Some people say, oh, the best part of getting a buyer's advocate is off-market properties. I'm like, yeah, that's a big bonus, but it's the value. And especially with certain people who need that confidence around value to be able to make decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's effort. All of these things, effort.
Okay. Last one, Amy. Number 7 out of 7, mistakes that people make. What is it?
So this last one is listening to well-meaning people's opinions. This could
well-meaning.
Be well-meaning, but may not necessarily be well-informed. So friends or family who have an opinion about how much that property is worth. And I have this happen like quite often where a client will say, well, you know, my dad said I shouldn't pay more than this. I said, well, first of all, what's he benchmarking against, you know, blah, blah, blah. Is he a valuer? Is he a real estate agent? And sometimes they'll just have this number that they pluck out of thin air. I've had a couple of times, like even building inspectors or mortgage brokers who have said, you know, oh, you shouldn't pay more than this amount. Yeah. Not my brokers or building inspectors that I've personally recommended. But that can be really hard because as a first home buyer, especially, you know, you're so vulnerable to other people's opinions and especially professional opinions. And you might think, well, my mortgage broker has told me this. They should know. They're in the business. Their job, first of all, their job is not a valuer. And secondly, not only is it not their job, they are doing you a disservice by doing that because they don't know.
The thing is, you don't recognize that unless you've been around the block a few times. You don't actually know, or unless you listen to this podcast, of course, Amy, you don't actually know who to trust because you typically go with the trust first and not the expertise. So what I mean by that is like you typically go with the accountant who's worked with you for 7 years because you're familiar, you trust them to do your money-related stuff. So you think they're informed, right? When really, yeah, they might have an opinion, but they're not the actual subject matter expert here.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's where people, I think, get it really wrong.
Yeah, your mortgage broker should be talking to you about mortgages. Your accountant should be talking to you about tax.
Yeah.
And if your parents are like, well, we don't think it's worth more than X because, you know, Smith Street around the corner sold for this price and it was better because there's been a location, had a bit of floor plan, Bob. And if they've got reasons behind it, great. Maybe they have done their research and they know what they're talking about. But it can be really, really challenging when, someone throws out their opinion on value without any justification. Yeah. It can cloud your judgment in a really negative way.
Yeah. So the lesson here is, I guess, just make sure you're doing the work, as you said before. Like, you got to do the work. There's like no shortcuts, and it's definitely not worth it because this is the biggest purchase of your life, probably. Chances are the biggest purchase of your life to date, unless you're downgrading. So do the actual work. Like, get out there, follow the steps that Amy's laid out, not just in this episode, but in many before. Like, I remember us talking about this maybe a year ago, maybe more. We talked about like how to pull apart the value of a property based on things like bedrooms, land, you know, building, all this type of stuff. These are all really important things and they shouldn't be, you know, skipped just because you feel like you've fallen in love with a property or you're taking advice from someone else.
Or you just don't know how to do it, so you don't try.
Yeah.
And if you really need to go and buy, get a buyer's agent. You don't necessarily have to engage a buyer's agent to do a full package for you where they find the property and everything. You could come to them and say, hey, I've already found a property I'm interested in. Can you do the due diligence, appraisal, negotiation, bidding, just the acquisition phase?
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper to do that as well as a one-off service.
I think for a lot of people that make so many mistakes, like, I just feel like I've really come around to that idea that it's almost like avoiding the mistakes rather than finding the hidden gem. It's actually just avoiding some of the common mistakes that people make, which is what this whole episode is about, which is avoiding those because they are costly and it's very hard to go back, if not impossible to go back in some situations. And I think some people are finding that out now. Well, Amy, this was heaps of fun. Now, this is the first podcast you've done since your buyer's advocacy related injury. So I hope, I wish you a speedy recovery. And I do appreciate you sharing all this information with us. If you do want to work with Amy, there are links, as always, every week in the show notes. No matter where you hear this podcast, if it's on the Australian Property Podcast, if you're listening to it on our finance podcast where Amy appeared recently, you can always find a link to her websites, to her business, all that sort of stuff in the show notes. It's right there in your podcast player. And as always, we're recording two times a week. We just want to be the most trusted property podcast. We don't have any ambitions beyond that. We just want to help you find property, own property, and make money sensibly over the long run. Amy, heaps of fun as always. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Owen. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Australian Property Podcast.
If you love the show, why not subscribe or leave us a review on Apple or Spotify?
And if you want to work with me, Amy, Pete, or Chris,
you'll find links in your podcast player to get in contact with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Australian Property Podcast. We're huge advocates of getting the right advice at the right time from the right people. That's why it's important to understand that this podcast episode contained general financial information only. It is not designed to be specific or personalized to your financial, tax, or legal situation. With property, the check sizes are pretty big, so it's important you get advice from a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information you hear in RASP podcasts. Thanks again for listening.
For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called RASK Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. RASK Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. RASK Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the RASK Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.